Good morning. It's a Thursday, Multimedia Live. We're here with our post budget analysis. Yesterday, Minister Tito Mboweni gave his inaugural national budget speech presentation in Parliament yesterday in Cape Town, and there were a lot of things that people were expecting and one or two surprises that came along the way. In studio, I'm joined by some experts that are going to be helping us to shed light on some of what was said yesterday in that presentation. We have Nicole and we have Suzanne, who are both senior managers with the Geneva Management Group, and then we've got Jerry, who is from Tax Consulting SA. How's everyone?
Fine, thanks, yourself.
Fine, thank you. I think for us to begin, before we actually get into the actual meat of the discussion, can I just get a brief sense, maybe 30 seconds from everyone, just around what your initial impressions were of the budget from yesterday? Were you surprised by anything, or was it sort of as people had expected? Because there had been a lot of hype around this, and I'm going to start with Suzanne.
Sure, thank you very much. I think Mr. Mboweni did not have much to work with. He didn't have much room to maneuver.
Yeah.
He likened the budget to an aloe, which basically comes down to you have to take the bitter with the sweet. Now, the last time that I checked, an aloe is only bitter. he made quite straightforward comments and asked quite straightforward questions, which we could come to later. But overall, it was quite a flat budget, not any surprises at all. And again, as I said, not much room to maneuver.
Jerry?
I was very surprised with the budget.
Oh, okay.
I thought he was going to put far more emphasis on things that would be very important for the budget here. Quite surprised with the fact that things that's been touted as very important as part of the future planning, things like e-tolls, national health insurance, those things hardly ever featured in the budget speech.
Yeah.
You know, fighting corruption, all these things that we hear, I thought there'd be far more emphasis on items such as those.
Okay.
And I mean, it literally wasn't even mentioned in the budget speech. If you look at where the money is going to go, it is certainly not going to the judiciary.
Yeah.
Now, I know the guys that have been running the jails might end up soon in the jail, but the money's gone elsewhere.
Yeah.
So it's been very, very interesting to see what the reaction to this will be and what the flow through of this will be. You know, whether there will actually be actions for once on things.
Yeah.
And one is very interested in terms of past commitments made and promises made, which has bucked the trend.
Mm.
This is the first budget ever, I think, in 25 years that I've been in this game, where there was actually effectively no tax relief given. He's only given us 153 rand tax relief each.
Yeah.
So he's indeed the 153 rand commissioner. tax rates remained flat out, you know, not a cent of relief.
Yeah.
And the truth is that makes every one of us poorer.
Okay. It'll be an interesting one because tax will be our first segment just now. But before that, Nicole, your first impressions?
I would have to agree with my colleague Suzanne on this one. So I think, looking at the budget, it was a relatively flat budget. I think in the beginning, based on predictions that were made from other analysts, we thought that we would see corporate tax rates going up. We thought that we would see individual tax rates going up, personal income tax. That didn't happen. But I think also taking a longer-term view, our finance minister definitely focused more on a structural type of budget in this regard. And I think what he focused on specifically was how do we clean up governance in SA so that in the longer term, although in the shorter term, if one looks at the budget, there's no relief, without a doubt. But in the longer term, how do we build economic growth from a structural point of view, from a good governance point of view?
Okay. So for us to begin our discussion, Jerry's already started talking a little bit about the tax. Let's hear some of what was actually said from yesterday and some impressions.
Finance Minister Tito Mboweni yesterday delivered the 2019 budget speech against the backdrop of a tough economy and an even tougher energy crisis. The budget included a new tax regime and a plan to streamline revenue collection and operation at SARS.
The South African Revenue Service is being fixed. A new commissioner for SARS will be appointed in the coming weeks. Secondly, a new illicit economy unit launched in August 2018 will fight the trade in illicit cigarettes and tobacco. The large business unit was a major source of tax collection, and its skill was well known and renowned. Unfortunately, over the past couple of years, this capacity has been undermined. This unit will be reintroduced and will be formally launched in early April. Four, SARS is strengthening its IT team and its IT systems, as this is crucial for our tax collection efforts. Five, information sharing agreements with allies internationally will help fight against cross-border tax evasion schemes, which are all over the place. I have requested Judge Davis to assess the tax gap, which is the difference between revenue collected and what ought to have been collected. We'll also review the proliferation of duty-free shops inside South Africa. Fiscal prudence requires some tax changes. We propose additional revenue measures of 15 billion rand in 2019-20. There will be a slight upward adjustment of the tax-free threshold for personal income taxes, with no change in the current personal income tax brackets. Together, this will raise 12.8 billion rand.
We ask tax experts for their opinions on the new regime. Sage tax expert Rob Cooper finds it surprising that the lower income tax brackets have not been protected.
If they had increased the tax rates, this would have led to a stifling of growth in the future, and instead of going that route, they decided to rather do away with inflation increases. For example, the medical tax credit was not adjusted for inflation, and this contributes about a billion rand, and the tax brackets were not increased for inflation, surprisingly, not even for lower income brackets, and this contributed in turn about 12 billion rand. As far as ETI is concerned, an inflation adjustment was made to the formulas that payroll must use to calculate the employment tax incentive. Otherwise, I was disappointed because I was hoping, bearing in mind that the employment tax incentive has been extended for another 10 years, that they would be simplifying the requirements around the employment tax incentive with a view to increasing the take-up by employers. Disappointing in that respect.
While Sanlam's personal finances head of client solution savings, Kinosi Mahosha, said that the budget was weighted with both pros and cons.
Economic growth. The bad news is that most South Africans are going to pay more tax as a result. The good news, though, is that data costs will fall. And also, he managed the increases in petrol prices not to be so significant. And first-time home buyers will get some financial support from the government.
So that's, just a little bit of what actually happened yesterday from the speech. And we had some of our other experts, weighing in. So from a discussion point of view, I think I'll start with Nicole here. What were your impressions? Do you think raising, because I think in the beginning of the speech, he went on about, the wines that are popular with the kids and, sin taxes on cigarettes. And then I think the fuel levy has been increased by about, I think it's 20 cents or something around that figure. Is it actually going to dent the coffers? Is it actually going to bring in revenues? Because I think they said they had a shortfall of about 200 billion rand or so. Is that actually going to help us with the shortfall, or is expenditure going to be the big thing, to control the budget?
My point of view in general is every single year we see an increase in your sin taxes. We see an increase in the fuel levy.
Yeah.
And yes, while that does result in revenue flowing to the authority or to the government, that in itself cannot be a significant a dent. It will not result in a dent in the budget deficit. My view in this regard is that instead of focusing on your sin taxes, and instead of focusing more on you know, the fuel levy, which at the end of the day affects the consumer, it hits the middle class and your lower income earners, it hits them hard.
Yeah.
I think that instead of focusing on those sources for revenue collection, why not look, and as in all fairness, it has been mentioned by the minister, why not focus more on governance at SARS? Focus more on the improvement of your IT systems.
Mm.
Based on what we see in practice, the IT systems, or the SARS systems, does not run. It doesn't read. It doesn't talk to one to each other.
Mm.
And the result thereof is that SARS is actually losing revenue.
Yeah.
So that, for me, would be a significant inflow. Okay. Of revenue.
I'm going to bring in Suzanne real quick to just say, Nicole is now talking about the IT systems. I think, you know, as a public, we kind of have this impression that SARS is very efficient when it comes to taking our money from us. But we're actually hearing that there's this bottleneck called their system. How big is this actual problem? And what were your impressions from his pieces about tax?
Sure. I think we feel it on a daily basis when we assist our clients. The quality of the IT has been let down severely, which the Honourable Minister has actually acknowledged. And it's encouraging to know that they will actually relook at the system.
Mm.
It is simple things like the server using Internet Explorer, not talking to Google Chrome. And, you know, for any taxpayer, SMEs being hit hard by practicalities and in the end them being prejudiced and being put in prejudiced positions just because of IT systems not talking to each other. We currently sit, for instance, with the suspension of payment that has been granted, but it's not talking to the system, meaning that the client is currently in a liability position of millions of rands, tens of millions of rands, just because the system is not talking to each other. And that's the practicality around it. Around the commissioner that will be appointed, exciting times. I think the acting commissioner up to now has been very helpful. He's been accessible. We've experienced it firsthand.
Yeah.
My background before international tax is tax disputes, and we still do that. For us, because the tax brackets have not been lifted, we expect more audits and more enforcement. Our ask and our challenge to SARS is to raise the quality of audits and raise the quality of requests for relevant material to make sure that there's not, that the quantity is not out there to have a catch-all effect, but making sure that it's targeted, knowing the different businesses, acquainting themselves with the nature of businesses before they actually get into the real nitty-gritty tax aspects of the business. I think that's severely important because in the end, what we've seen with our clients, they want to pay their fair taxes, but currently they are burdened with too much requests for information, too much audits, more like a fishing expedition rather than a targeted approach.
I see what you mean.
That makes sense.
Jerry, your impressions, you had already started talking earlier on about the, you know, something that Suzanne has brought up, the fact that these tax brackets haven't really been moved that much. Was it going to change anything, do you think, if he had?
I think for somebody earning, which I guess is for most of our clients, which is relative high net worth individuals, perhaps not that much. But I'm also very involved with the South African Reward Association that deals with how much people get paid and how they get paid. And the reality is, if you at the end of the month only have $1,000 in your pocket left, you know, after paying the bare necessities, then inflation adjustment becomes important.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of hundred rand makes a lot of sense. And that is why I'm kind of with Rob Cooper on this one. I really would have thought, I've certainly not heard anybody saying that would increase the tax rates. I think that for me was the limit. But I was very surprised that at least at the lowest level of society, the most vulnerable guys, just entering the job market, people earning just over 79,000, that's now where the new tax threshold kicks in. For those people, a bit of relief makes a huge difference. For pensioners, it makes a huge difference. And I was quite surprised that in a budget year that at least he would not take care of those most vulnerable levels, especially if they've done it for so many years before.
So then the question I would then pose to you is, you know, going forward, because we heard some of the experts now telling us that South Africans might end up actually paying more tax. And for people that aren't particularly familiar with the tax code, how does yesterday's budget actually affect someone on a daily basis walking into Pick n Pay, or just, you know, doing the on an everyday basis? How has yesterday's budget affected them? Because I think the impression is that unless my personal income tax brackets or the tax rates actually gets increased or decreased, I'm not really, you know, going to feel it that much. But we heard something different earlier. So on a, in a practical sense, how does that, you know, affect ordinary South Africans? Jerry?
Well, the term often used is stealth taxes. So it's hidden.
Yeah.
You know, so I think on the On the negative side, of course, because fuel tax goes up.
Yeah.
So basically, whatever is the pump price, we are now into the 40% of what you put into the car goes to the tax man.
Yeah.
So if you put 10 rand of petrol into your car, 4 rand of that 10 rand is actually going straight to the tax man.
Yeah.
And that's a big increase. You know, I think it therefore indirectly hits everyone.
Mm.
I think on the positive side, obviously there's been a little bit of VAT relief on white bread, on sanitary pads, and I think on maize or fuel.
Cake flour.
Sorry, I don't bake, so but I can see you're very, very glad to hear that. Thanks for bailing me out. So it's indirect taxes where you get hit, but ultimately it boils down about life just gets more you know, life becomes more expensive. You don't get through your money. We see, because we deal a lot with employers, that obviously a lot of companies are in retrenchment processes at the moment. It's kind of like post-recession now, it's hitting guys. So companies do not have a lot of money to give increases for.
Yeah.
And employees are absolutely valid when they say, but guys, I just don't come out anymore. You know, they're not lying to the employer when they say that.
Yeah.
So that is where traditionally that inflation adjustment was so important. You know, that government plays its part in that as well.
In that,
and the fact that it's not there means that there's definitely going to now be from union side more pressure on employers to perhaps make up for that and give better increases.
Mm.
So we're all in the same boat, and it's a tough boat at the moment. Mm. I personally think that, you know, and I think I kind of agree with the sentiment that there needs to be way better enforcement.
Yeah.
You know, the good guys that's in the tax net gets challenged more and more and more. And the guys that's outside the tax net, you know, the ones that pay all these cash bribes and stuff like that, they're outside the tax net.
Yeah.
And there's nothing said about going after those guys.
Yeah.
That's where the big money sits, in my view.
Okay.
And you just need a couple of very, very good examples, you know, to really change the game. And, I mean, from a SARS capacity perspective, we don't personally experience the IT system as that prohibitive. I think for us it generally works where it gets sorted out. I think for us the far bigger issue is the level of expertise within SARS.
Yeah.
And it was specifically noted in the plans that they acknowledge they have to upskill SARS, and they're going to go and make external appointments.
Yeah.
And they said, by the way, we're going to make these appointments by end of April 2019. We're going to have these experts in place. Now,
I take it you don't think that's going to happen.
I know it's not going to happen because we as a practice daily receive very good SARS CVs or SARS officers looking for work, and those are the people they shouldn't They should be retaining. And on the flip side is, I just don't know where you find that level of expertise. You're going to have to find them from the private sector.
Okay. Ordinary people?
Ordinary people, I agree with Jerry. People on the ground being hit with unnecessary queries, refunds due to clients, refunds being audited by SARS before the refunds are actually paying out.
Yeah.
Referring to the mini-budget speech in October, I think at least 50% of what was anticipated was actually not actually achieved due to the VAT refunds that were not VAT refunds that had to be paid out, which was undertaken by the SARS Acting Commissioner to sort that out. People on the ground, as Jerry rightly mentioned, your fuel levies going up. I think sparkling wine, for instance, went up by 60 cents per litre. And one would say that's not just a sin tax, but almost, you know, who drinks sparkling wine? So going after those people. so it's in general, although there's no relief being given, the levies and the, customs has also been lifted. Tough times ahead.
Yeah.
The bitter, with reference to the aloe that Mr. Honourable Minister Tutu Mboweni mentioned, I think it's the, I do believe, and he mentioned that as well with the aloe, with the reference to the aloe, is that the economy and South Africans are resilient.
Okay.
And there's hope in that.
Let's see. Let's see what happens, because we now have to move on to the next phase. And I think this was the part of the speech that people had been anticipating the most, because this was the SOEs, this was ESCOM, and this is where, okay, we've now collected the money. What are we going to do with this money? So let's hear what actually happened yesterday with regards to the SOEs and ESCOM.
Mboweni took a hard stance on national spending on failing SOEs. He went as far as to say that pouring money directly into ESCOM in its current form is like pouring water into a sieve.
The SOEs pose very serious risks to the fiscal framework. Funding requests from SAA, SABC, DINEL, ESCOM, and other financially challenged state-owned enterprises have increased, with several requesting state support just to continue operating. Isn't it about time that the country asks itself the question, do we still need all these enterprises? If we do, can we manage them better?
Yet Mboweni's injection of 23 billion rand a year into ESCOM has taxpayers wondering what the real effects will be on their pockets, despite his words. Sanlam Investments economist Arthur Kump has this to say.
Due to underperforming state-owned companies and a weaker-than-expected economy, the National Treasury is finding it difficult to keep government finance on a sustainable path. The Treasury is cutting spending by 50.3 billion rand over the next 3 years, but is also planning to inject 23 billion rand per year into ESCOM, so the expenditure ceiling lifts over the medium term.
So, that was, as we said, the part of the speech that everyone had been touting and, you know, waiting for. And Nicole, what were your thoughts? I think one of the biggest things he said, and he emphasized it at the beginning, he was like, the government will not be taking on ESCOM's debt. I don't understand what exactly that means if we are giving 23 billion to ESCOM for 3 years. I don't understand. Like, can you explain to the ordinary person, in whatever way you understand, what Minister Mboweni is trying to achieve here?
I think I have to agree with you 100%. I honestly, for me, there's two sides to the coin.
Yes.
On the first hand, I agree with you 100%. By government financing ESCOM, or assisting them, in the words of our finance minister, with the 23 billion or the 69 billion over 3 year period, in effect, technically, they are assisting ESCOM with the debt, even though ESCOM got itself into the mess in the first place.
Yes.
On the other hand, as I've stated previously, this was a structural budget.
Yeah.
And our government is looking at economic growth and also how to satisfy the rating agencies.
Yes.
So that South Africa is now downgraded to junk status.
Yeah.
And in that, I think that the assistance that was provided to ESCOM, although many of us don't agree, I am one of them, okay? The assistance that was provided by ESCOM, one could technically argue, is in fact needed, okay, to promote the economic growth, et cetera, going forward. And I think the minister was very clear in that he said, although assistance will be provided to ESCOM to basically get them out of the deep mess that they are in currently,
yeah.
It is important to note that the assistance will be ring-fenced by strict requirements and specifically by the appointment of a chief reconfiguration officer.
Yeah.
That in itself, I think, is important,
yeah.
Okay, because that chief reconfiguration officer will basically be the eyes and ears of Treasury.
Yeah.
The question again then comes down, and this is what the ordinary person in the street would want to know.
Yes.
Firstly, would that be a competent appointment?
Yes.
Okay, that is just based on our history, we've seen many people being appointed that are incompetent, that cannot fulfill the function or the intention of what is stated by Treasury.
Yeah.
That is on the one hand. And then also on the other hand, in order for this assistance program to work and in order to see economic growth going forward, apart from the fact that this person needs to be competent, we also need to look at another very important fact, as are they actually going to enforce, you know, the intention of what the minister and what Treasury is looking at going forward.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Suzanne, I think when he said, Nicole, please tell me the name of the practitioner
Chief Reconfiguration Officer.
That really sounds to me like a fancy way of saying a business rescue practitioner, that that we're bringing in someone who's going to help to clean up the mess. Do you agree with that, one? And two, for the rest of it, chief reorganization. Yes. Do you think, one, it's something that's worthwhile doing, because there's probably going to be, you know, some tensions between the SOEs themselves because they haven't just gotten here, right? There's cultures, you know, ways of doing things, that's on one side. And then the second part is, as taxpayers, should we really be pumping in that much money into these companies?
Sure. First of all, from the CRO perspective.
Yeah.
Mr. Mbeweni actually has first-hand experience in that. He was a board member of a certain company,
yeah.
Which had to be rescued.
Yeah.
And in doing so and cleaning up the company and making sure that it's on the right path again,
yeah.
That was the actual strategy that was followed. And I'm sure that he's taken lead from the first-hand experience.
Okay.
Second of all, I think by asking the questions that he asked, quite straightforward, and I think it is warranted. Do we still need these SOEs?
Yes.
Because essentially, it's the taxpayers, and you're asking, you know, for the ban on the street, what does it mean?
Mm.
Are these entities still needed? And it's a warranted question, very pro-business,
yeah.
In the sense that obviously talking to privatization, which is quite sensitive at the moment because the unions don't like it.
Yeah.
The unions, you know, by asking these questions, there could very much be a strike tomorrow,
mm.
Just because of, you know, the uncertainty that's being created. Essentially, I think the unbundling of ESCOM will also be an interesting thing to see how it actually plays out when it actually comes to the allocation and actual application of the $69 billion that's being used over the three-year period to turn ESCOM around.
Yeah.
I'm sure you will have a tight leash on the strategy
yeah.
over the next 3 years.
Yeah.
We don't have a choice to turn it around.
Yeah.
And maybe after that, revise the strategy around the SOEs and how it will actually play out in future.
Mm. Jerry, $100 billion was the number we heard last week. Yesterday, mm. we heard $69 billion. The other $31 billion that hasn't been mentioned, where is that going to come from? Or when do you think it will be allocated? Because whether we like it or not, as you know, Nicole was rightly saying, government is taking on ESCOM's debt. They might not want to put it in those words, but they are essentially doing this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not a economist.
Yes.
So I think from a tax perspective and a governance perspective, we pretty much know our game.
Yeah.
What I can say, I'm very grateful it's not my problem to fix.
Yes.
Because I don't think I'll be able to do a better job.
Yeah.
I do think on the ESCOM side, it's a complete no-brainer that the consumer is going to have to pick up that tab for the how many billion, because if governments aren't bailing it out,
mm.
the only way where the money is going to come from is going to increase in electricity prices. And I think ESCOM has applied for a 15% increase per year over 3 years.
Mm.
So we're going to pay for that.
Yeah.
Is the state-owned enterprises a positive or negative thing, slippery slope. We as a firm look after very, very large quantity or amount of foreign groups basing themselves in South Africa.
Yeah.
Doing work in Africa.
Yeah.
So they don't have a single client in South Africa, but the whole group is based in South Africa.
Yeah.
And perhaps from unexpected source, I'm a huge fan of South African Airways.
Yeah.
I know they cost us a lot of money.
Yeah.
Those routes, you might question the viability.
Yes.
But when those
Kimberley
groups,
to Nelspruit.
Yeah. when those groups set up business in South Africa,
yeah,
it is the African network of flights, which is a big deciding factor.
Oh, is it?
And it's a key factor, because sometimes in Africa you might have to fly all the way to South Africa to have a 200-kilometer trip somewhere else.
Yes.
You know, so you'd rather fly to South Africa and fly somewhere else than try to do the 200-kilometer trip. And there's a huge contribution to the economy because of that structural part of SA.
Yeah.
You know, did they buy their Boeings the way they should? Probably not, but yeah, that's a different discussion. So I'm very much in terms of on the fence of this. What I am worried about from a governance perspective,
yeah,
is what is a chief reorganization officer?
Yes.
Last time when I looked at King Four,
yeah,
you should have a competent CEO that can execute the mandate of your shareholders.
Yes.
So if you tell your CEO to restructure and he can't do it, you should find a competent one.
Yes.
Don't keep the incompetent CEO and appoint now a competent chief reorganization officer to restructure. Who's the boss? You know, there, yeah, can only be one captain to a ship.
Mm.
So it's a very strange comment. It's very strange that it's jointly appointed by the Minister of Finance and Public Enterprises. Even in the budget speech when he talked about the soldiers, he had a jab about one department not paying the other department. So there's all sorts of lines and dotted lines here. I just want them to keep the lights on. That's all that I ask for.
I think that's what's the most important thing. But right now we want to hear what the market had to say, because at the end of the day, you know, we have to keep, you know, business moving in South Africa. So here are just some of the market reactions.
In the wake of the budget, Business Day editor Lukanyo Mnyanda states that the markets reacted swiftly to the unveiling of the 69 billion rand pledged to Eskom over the next 3 years. He says that this would create a predicted budget deficit wider than the country has seen in a decade, to a level of 4.5% by 2020, leaving all South Africans wondering what the effect on the real economy will be moving forward.
Suzanne, let me start with you, you know, in this particular round. I guess now it's, you know, the part of the discussion where we say, you know, what now, you know, moving forward. We've seen, I think, you know, yesterday we're discussing with some colleagues, you know, what's more important, SONA or the budget, you know, and I think we agreed that SONA is where they tell us what they want to do, and then the budget speech is where they tell us how they're going to pay for what they want to do. And then now we actually have to wait for them to do what they want to do. So for you, what do you think are some of the big takeaways from yesterday's budget speech? And moving forward, would they be able to actually do this? And one of the big, there seems to be consensus in the room that there needs to be a lot of discipline in terms of executing the plans from yesterday. So your thoughts on that?
Just to answer, first of all, the last comment that you had, I think trust is something that needs to be rebuilt.
Yeah.
Given the past 2 years, I think it's crucial for the government to actually follow through on what they've undertaken to do, at least on what's been said in SONA and at least what's been said at the budget yesterday. I guess the overall theme is how to create certainty in an uncertain world at the moment. The budget has come and gone.
Yeah.
It's, in my opinion, investment neutral. If I was a foreign direct, or if I was a foreign direct investor,
yeah,
I would wait it out until after the elections to see what happens with the elections first. So from a budget perspective and the immediate aftermath, I think I would have waited out. We would need to wait and see what Moody's do tomorrow.
Is it tomorrow?
There's an expected announcement for Moody's tomorrow, which is currently the only rating agency that has our local currency debt at investment grade.
Yeah.
So they might or might not adjust their grading. So therefore, for me, the takeaway is do what you do within the ambit and within the parameters that you are given.
Yeah.
Make sure that you're compliant. I'm sure from a SARS perspective, with a large business unit being revived again, and the audit teams that are also bolstered up, make sure that you're compliant. Make sure you create your own certainty in an uncertain sphere at the moment. And where needed, get the proper advice.
Jerry, your thoughts moving forward? We've got the plan. We've been told how it's going to be paid for moving forward now.
I think we need some great examples of how people are being held accountable.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to see the MPA more involved. I think they should go after you know, the one topic that's, we're in a budget deficit, but what about all the money that's been stolen?
Yeah.
Stolen, inverted commas, both in terms of bonuses that got declared to people when there shouldn't have been bonuses. Are they going to be recouped? What about money that's changed hands, that's not been taxed? And I don't think I do not like this idea of planting a seed for the future. You know, we're not a barren piece of land. There's a huge amount of wealth here.
Mm.
We just have to take it back from those that are stolen for a start.
Yeah.
And you'll actually find you might have a forest to start with, you know, as opposed to planting the first seed. So I think there's a huge amount of accountability that needs to happen very quickly. And I think that there's very, very good examples around the world, in the US, you know, when they broke the mafia. around the world, there's examples of where tax is used to create a bit of social cohesion.
Yeah.
And if they get that accountability correct, I think it's going to be, you know, the man in the street that's not compliant will very quickly get his ducks in a row.
Yeah. Nicole?
My views.
Yeah, like where to from here? Like,
yeah, I think for the ordinary man in the street, this was definitely not a proper budget,
yeah,
as the unions alluded to.
Yeah.
So I think going forward, these tough times ahead, I think we're going to have to tighten our belts.
Yeah.
For insofar as corporates and just the general economic environment is concerned, I think that if, and like Suzanne said, if the government actually follows through with what was undertaken in the budget speech yesterday,
yeah,
in terms of clean governance, ensuring that there's more compliance, etc., and also basically restoring SARS to ensure that revenue does flow, that in itself can again boost investor confidence.
Mm.
That obviously leads to economic growth in SA, more employment opportunities.
Yeah.
If government, however, fails to deliver on what was promised in the budget speech yesterday, I think South Africa's in for tougher times.
Yeah.
I think in that regard, we're going to see a lot of capital being exported from South Africa,
yeah,
not only in the form of corporates leaving SA, but also in the form of a high net worth individuals immigrating.
Yeah.
That results in a lack of skills in,
yeah,
SA. That results in capital leaving SA, money leaving SA. That is something that should be avoided. So the gist of it is, government, you need to step up and actually honor your obligations.
Actually, on that point, because you're talking about capital flight, high net worth individuals, the corporates, I think something we hadn't been able to touch on, because we spoke about how does everything said from yesterday affect the ordinary South African, etc. I understand that all three of you work with corporate clients or institutions in some way. What do you think is what do you think has been the effect of the budget on them, and how will they be feeling? You know, are they feeling antsy about keeping their operations in South Africa, or are they looking to go, you know, somewhere else? Yeah.
Just based on what we've seen in practice, we actually see a lot of our corporate clients, as well as high net worth individuals,
yeah,
who are actually looking to immigrate, okay, whether it's immigrate their business or actually just open up business offshore.
Yeah.
And once again, depending on how our government deals with the current crisis in South Africa,
yeah,
that's going to result in a lot of clients looking at offshore structuring, which again results in a flight of capital from South Africa. I don't know if Suzanne can maybe add to that.
I think at the moment you're in either camp. You're either quite positive about South Africa and want to invest and want to stay it out, or you in flight mode. And we recently collaborated with the EU Chamber of Commerce. And from first-hand experience, the different, at least European countries, and the different chambers are definitely motivated and they want to invest into South Africa. They want to work together with the local businesses as well. That's what we've seen firsthand. Then you've got your entrepreneurs who not necessarily at the moment is in a very nurturing environment for their businesses. And in that way, they diversify and also want to create a rand hedge to make sure that they're actually hedging their businesses and themselves in that way. And if I say, if I talk about businessmen, I'm talking about people giving back to the communities, making sure that they're creating employment, all of that. But the environment in which they're currently operating is not necessarily nurturing to their businesses. And I think with a common theme in the room, really, if government can help those SMEs, entrepreneurs, high net worth individuals, and then the man on, you know, the normal man on the street, I think that would create a conducive environment going forward in the long term. It's not something that will happen overnight, of course. It will take some time to recover. But if we can just stick to our word and follow through, I'm quite positive that things will get better.
So from your engagement, you said you were engaging with some countries from Europe. You said it's the European Chamber. European Chamber of Commerce. And there's positive sentiment. People want to invest in South Africa. But from that engagement, what would you say are the challenges or the concerns that are being expressed about South Africa from the Europeans?
Referring to my earlier comments, I think certainty is a major concern and at the back of their minds. I think making sure that that there are not other sentiments following our neighbour countries. And this is really just from them looking from the outside in. But again, as I said, the overall sentiment is positive.
Jerry? Moving forward, and then also the corporate clients, like how are the sentiment in corporate South Africa, and I guess corporates and institutions from outside, you know, what do you feel?
I'm naturally quite bullish. That's why I'm here. We obviously have a very, very large client base of South African employers with people outside. A lot of them are financially immigrating, which is the SARS and the Reserve Bank process to formally declare that you're leaving South Africa. So I do think there's a lot of people leaving permanently, and it's scary the skill sets that we lose as part of that process. Submissions has been done to National Treasury on that. They've come back. They've got a consultative session on the 6th of March, where basically they want to try and untangle that a bit. And a lot of the largest corporates of South Africa is going to be in attendance there, because it's making South Africa very uncompetitive, these rules around how we want to tax South Africans working abroad in future. So there's definitely National Treasury that knows that that tax law is prohibitive at the moment in terms of South Africans working abroad. The flip side is, other part of our practice deals with work permits, and I mean it's interesting information, but you know there's literally foreign businesses with a couple of good couple of hundred, one over a thousand expats into South Africa. That's a client of ours, and those guys bring skills and money in. And in the budget speech, he talked about getting more critical skills into South Africa sooner. So I do think the visa process, in my experience, it's not half as bad as people often make it. Perhaps for tourists with unabridged visas, that's a different story. But from a business perspective, I've not seen a foreign business owner not being able to set up shop here or bring in the skills from a work permit perspective. If you do it, the process right, you do get it right. So I do think the world is looking at South Africa to invest in Africa. I think we can talk a lot about the negatives, uncertainty and uncertainty, but do you really want to sit in the middle of Brexit at the moment? Or do you want to sit in the debt crisis in Europe? Or would you rather prefer to be in the US at the moment? There's uncertainty everywhere in the world.
Yeah.
I think what we should do is create that stability, and I think we, it's an old cliche, but if we can just become that gateway to Africa, we will be in such good shape for the future.
Mm. So we've come to the end of the show. I guess some parting thoughts from everyone. There is a question. It's a curiosity, and I like the fact that I'm in a room full of people that understand the tax code. One of the things that kept being spoken about as we conclude is just that issue of South Africa's tax base is small. You know, this is what we hear. South Africa's tax base is small, and we need to grow the tax base, et cetera, et cetera. What is this tax base? I understand what the tax base means and versus the number of people in the workforce, et cetera. But is there an optimal size for this thing, or are we just looking to grow it? That's my first question. And the second one is, how big is the actual tax base? I think the last number I ever heard was around 6.5 million taxpayers. I think it was a couple of years ago. I don't know if my numbers are still current.
Just on the tax base and broadening the tax base, it comes down to employment.
Yeah.
And creating, you know, to alleviate unemployment.
Yeah.
It comes down to making sure that whoever are leaving the last year at school, in matric, are actually given opportunities, whether it's semi-skilled or skilled, or even tertiary education. I think it's vitally important to broaden the tax base by creating the viable opportunities for employment.
Mm.
I know Mr. Our Honourable President, he has got quite a few initiatives going at the moment to achieve just that. So I know especially there's been a specific venture capital company that's also been set up by the government to actually assist youth to be part of the employment base.
Yeah.
So to broaden that, it shouldn't be someone who's in the highest tax bracket. It's really just to get someone within the tax net, making sure, and it's not just about collecting the taxes, it's making sure that people are living out their purposes, making sure that their skills and the innovation that's out there, so many, especially young people, has got so many great ideas, but actually cultivating an environment for them to actually executing whatever they have in mind, I think that's vitally important. And I think if South Africa can get to that point where we are, as Jerry alluded to, being the springboard into Africa, from an innovation perspective, from being vibrant, from being, you know, launching initiatives that we've never thought about before, that talk to the middle market and making sure that day-to-day activities can actually run without, you know, any impediments, I think employment, it all comes down to employment creation and cultivating that environment to do so.
Cool. Any last thoughts before we, you know, conclude?
I think just to add on what Suzanne said, if you know, taking the positive from what government has done or what they continue to do going forward, I think the employment tax incentive has been a great initiative by government.
Yeah.
And that in itself can assist with actually broadening your tax base. So I don't know if you know, but how the employment tax incentive works, but essentially the incentive allows employers to take your unemployed, unskilled youth, okay, between the ages of 18 and 29, and to offer them an opportunity.
Yeah.
And I think the maximum salary that you can pay them, as now recently in yesterday's budget speech, been pushed up to 6,500. And that in itself, I think, is a great initiative because you're taking your unskilled, unemployed youth off the streets.
Mm.
And you're giving them the opportunity to build up a certain skill. And at the end of that period that they're employed for, they can they're sitting with a skill set and they can then take it forward.
Yeah.
So on a positive end, I think government has launched a great initiative.
On that end. Jerry, final thoughts?
Individual taxpayers, 20.9 million, so 21 million individual taxpayers, 3 million companies, 360,000 trusts, 500,000 employers, 760 VAT vendors, 310 people importing and 280 exporting. That's your tax base. that's per the budget speech.
Yeah.
That's what you want to increase.
Yeah.
So by creating that base as wide as possible, you can build as high as possible.
Yeah.
I personally think there's absolutely massive non-compliance in South Africa. I think tax non-compliance is a national sport in South Africa. And, I think the cases that come across our desk often is not the sins of yesterday.
Yeah.
If you did something wrong with your tax yesterday, you're not going to be tomorrow in court. That wheel turns very slowly. The matters we sit with now often dates back to something that happened 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and I think for the entrepreneur and for the business person and the employer, the tail can't swing the dock. You don't build a strong business with weak tax compliance.
Yeah.
You know, rather focus on building your business as opposed to not getting your taxes right.
Cool. So thank you so much to everyone to listening to our post-national budget analysis. We're looking at it from a deeply tax point of view. Thank you to our guests in the building. We had Suzanne Smith, who is a senior tax manager at Geneva Management Group, together with Nicole Paulson, another senior tax manager at Geneva Management Group. And then we also had Jerry Bota, who's managing partner at Tax Consulting South Africa. Thank you so much to everyone in the room. This has been Multimedia Live Essays Post-National Budget Analysis. My name is Mudio Agavaza. Make sure you stay tuned for the next one as we keep you informed about the world of business.